You're listening to littlepodcast.com.
I'm going to turn you down a little bit. Okay. Talk to me. Let me hear what you sound like.
What's up? I'm looking at my list of things I should get on my Wii, and just seeing if there's anything on the Wii U, so I don't have to actually spend the money right now.
Wii U? More like EU.
Ugh.
Sorry. That's a...
This week on the Famicom Dojo Video Game Podcast, we celebrate 1 year of the Nintendo Switch. We share some boring statistics, some hopefully less boring anecdotes, recap our experiences from launch day, and both of us admit how the Nintendo Switch stopped us from playing the new Mass Effect game, albeit different ones. Oh, please, one more continue.
Hey, Sean.
Hey, Vink.
Are you recording?
Yes.
Are you sure?
Listen, we recorded
Let's
the
double
other
episode. Check.
It was recorded. The thing that happened is that we didn't record it was that one file got saved over another file, and we didn't realize, and then Dropbox, and...
I'm telling you, this is why we should record everything as a backup to Wax Cylinder.
I think the audio of Fidel... Oh, okay, sure, why not?
If it was good enough for Thomas Edison's podcast, it's good enough for ours.
Oh, boy.
I really like that Mary Had a Little Lamb episode. Anyway. Sorry. Is that too obscure? Maybe that's too obscure.
Real obscure.
Sorry. Okay. Anyway, you know what? When he originally made it, one of the ways he was trying to sell it was he thought it would be really, really good as a way to record the last words of a dying family member.
Oh, God.
Yeah, they thought, oh, we could record. But, like, what? I just can't even imagine. Hey, kids, gather around. Let's listen to Grandma snuff it. You know, I mean, it's just like, I just, but.
This way they can remember their loved ones as they remember them. Talking about video games instead of reading them a bedtime story.
Oh, yes.
Or something.
Oh, yes.
But I read my kids their bedtime story before the podcast.
That's good. It's the morning now. My kids are at school, and this is the golden time. So I'm telling you, this podcast better be really good because you're getting in the way of my game time right now. And I could probably play Xenoblade anytime, but this is probably the only time I can play Bayonetta and not feel like a terrible parent.
Oh my gosh. Nintendo Switch, you guys.
Nintendo Switch.
Flippin' Switch. I feel bad. This is our first time, well, second time talking about it. It's been out for about a year now.
Yeah, by the time this podcast hits, yeah, probably about a year. Yeah. March 3rd, right? So
that's crazy. And you know, we the very next episode that came out after the launch of our podcast, wasn't by us. It was by Trey and the Nerd and Tie crew.
Yes, it
for
was
our April
yes,
Fool's
it was.
Swap episode. And so people haven't really gotten to hear our thoughts about the Switch.
I mean, if they've been listening to our last three episodes, I mean, we're definitely talking about it right now. But yeah, we haven't really gone in. Well, we have, but that is our lost episode. But I think this would be a good time to reflect back on the year that it's been, and to talk about the future, and I don't know how it's affected gaming and the good and the bad. And there are both. For sure. All right. I guess before we go into our feelings on the system, let's talk about how it's doing. You've got some stats for us, right?
Oh, sure. Yeah. It even since the first time we recorded this episode, like yes. things have just been getting better and better for the Switch, and I'm honestly blown away. So like, you know, we've been following it, right? Originally, it sold almost 3 million units in its first month,
yep,
which is phenomenal. And then by like, what was it, like November, I think, we recorded yeah. our podcast,
yeah.
it had become the fastest selling console in North America.
Yes.
There was one month where it was outsold by another console, and that was due to supply constraints.
And PS4 was running this amazing deal where they were selling it during Black Friday for $200. And I'm going to say the same thing that I said on our last podcast. Why did no one buy me one? It was only $200.
Are you pointing that at me? Because listen, you know, the year yeah. before I got you that whole set of Lego Dimensions.
Yes.
And you've of course played that, right?
Moving on. come on, like. That was bad timing on the universe, because like
suppose.
I had a new son, so I couldn't play with little block things anywhere. And you know, and then the Switch came out, and I gotta say that it's not Lego Dimensions fault or anything like that, but I pulled the HDMI cable in the back of it to hook to the Switch dock, and I haven't put it back yet.
Oh, no.
It's not saying that the Wii U was a bad system. I enjoyed it a lot, but like the Switch does everything better.
Mm.
Like the Wii U had to die for our sins so that we could get the Switch.
Oh God! I mean,
because the Switch is basically just—it's like the logical, like the Wii U is a stepping stone that
mm-hmm.
was in a form factor that nobody wanted, and the Switch is like the logical conclusion of that.
Oh, for sure, for sure.
And that's unfortunate because. Because I did like a lot of the games on the Wii U, but even at that time, like there wasn't really enough to keep me constantly gaming. I will say that listen to old episodes of the podcast, and you'll hear me talking very positively about the Wii U. But the truth of the matter is when I had the Wii U, I was playing games once or twice a week. But since mm-hmm. I got the Switch, I look. By the way, do you have the parental controls app?
I do. I'm a little annoyed by it actually, because it's the only way that you can keep track of your usage stats.
Yes, it is. But it's actually pretty useful. But by looking at that app, I can find that like since the Switch released, there's only been like 20 days out of the 365 that it's been out that I haven't played.
Oh, jeez.
And I'm looking at your status right now, and I see that you haven't played at all in about 2 weeks.
Oh, boy. Well, you know, we did our last episode, right?
Yeah.
And then, you know, I had played a lot, you know,
yes.
after
yes.
my injury
yes.
and everything. I played a lot of two games, you know, so I think I did pretty well. But now, you know, I'm back in the swing of things.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
And everything. I need new games to play.
Or you need to break another leg.
Jeez. Oh, how many games do you own? I've got, you know, I've got like four cartridge titles and a handful of downloadable stuff. So, you know, and the attach rate on this thing's been pretty amazing in general. So I think that's,
yeah.
that's pretty good. But, you know, I'm sure you have a few titles yourself.
Nintendo should be sending someone, a representative over just to shake my hand for increasing the attach rate globally. I have 30 games.
No. Really?
And like 20 of them are physical. I have 20 Switch game cards. Maybe 21. No, I loaned Mario plus Rabbids to one of my friends. I have 21.
Oh, good
and
grief.
Then I have bought 10 titles digitally. And
I don't
you know I'm against digital, but most of them were fairly inexpensive and like And I'll tell you what, if they put out a physical card of Oxenfree or Thimbleweed Park, I will buy it again.
Oh my gosh. I don't even know if I have 20 games for the Wii.
You sadden me. Please send your resumes to be the new co-host of Famicom Dojo.
Hey, okay.
I'm still here. Yes, for now. Anyway, no, I get it. But that I think that's the testament to this. Like, I think after the first year of the Wii U, I had five games, maybe. I guess it's not a totally fair comparison because with the Wii U, there was also Virtual Console.
Right.
So, you know, I had things like Earthbound, not the first year, I don't think, but, you know, pretty soon into it. Maybe it is actually the lack of a Virtual Console and Netflix and Miiverse and all of that stuff. I mean, we'll get into that later, but
sure.
That might be why I'm playing more games.
I think you're right.
Because when I turn on the Wii U, I'm like, what's going on Miiverse? Hey, look at this. Oh, mm-hmm. Oh, you know what? I really should get caught up on something on Netflix. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. There's too much for an ADD gamer's mind. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah.
Ooh, look at that. Ooh. But the Switch is like, so what can I do on the Switch? Games. And?
Right.
No, that's it.
There is a Hulu app now, but I haven't used it.
Yeah, but, you know, I'm sorry for the 8 people who watch Hulu. you know what? That's mean. I used to have Hulu, and I quite enjoyed it, but Japanese Hulu has really taken a turn for the worst, so.
So has American Hulu, honestly.
Yeah, and Japanese Netflix really went up, and then I have Amazon Prime, so I got that service for free anyway, and Hulu had to go.
Bummer,
sorry,
dude.
Sorry, Hulu. But anyway, so I've just been, and to tell you the truth, the only reason I haven't beat more games this year is just because there's so many that I'm kind of switching between, and so many of them are quite extensive.
Sure.
Like, I've put a lot of hours into Zelda. I've put over 150 hours into Xenoblade, too.
Grief, yeah.
And I'm still finding, like, it's almost over. Almost ready to cry. So, but luckily, New Game Plus comes next month. So, actually, by the time this podcast comes out, it'll probably be out there. So, I'm really looking forward to that.
Well, here's where I'm at. Like, you know, it's been a year, and I definitely put the most amount of time into the Breath of the Wild, but I haven't finished it yet because, you know, kind of like for Xenoblade with you, I don't want it to end because I know that I won't play it anymore. But realistically, what ended up happening was I played it for 6 months and then didn't play it anymore. So, like, what's the difference, right? I've been sort of grinding here and there to finish up a few things, and I think now I just want to get through it and be done so I can move on to, you know, another new game like Skyrim, which I guess isn't really
new. Xenoblade 2. Play Xenoblade okay. 2. I mean, Skyrim's a good choice if you haven't played it as well.
I haven't.
But
I'll fill the hole left by the fact that EA will not release any of its BioWare titles for the Switch that I'm aware of.
Well, maybe we're dodging a bullet on that one.
Maybe we are.
That might have been in the Lost podcast too, but we were bemoaning the state of Mass Effect Andromeda and things like that.
Yeah, I think that made it into some subsequent ones too.
Did it? Okay, maybe. Yeah, but yeah. But I mean, it's worth bemoaning further. But that seems
ridiculous, though, right?
Right.
Because there's going to be another Dragon Age game coming out that was confirmed, right? And Nintendo, the Switch. The Switch, okay, beat the Wii U lifetime sales. Beat it in the first 10 months.
Yep.
Beat it stone cold dead. They planned how much for the first year?
$10 million.
$10 million.
And it's probably going to hit it around. What did you? You gave me a number earlier.
Yeah, they hit 10 million in 9 months, and they have shipped over 13 million in the first 10 and a half months, and expect to sell almost 17 million by the end of the fiscal year in March.
Okay, that's freaking crazy. I mean, of course, it's way behind PlayStation 4, which was like a global hit, but like, nobody really saw this coming for the Switch. And I think we can go back to the predictions podcast, one of them, and I think I predicted that it would do around Nintendo 64 levels.
Okay.
I might have even said like higher than GameCube, lower than Nintendo 64, in which I'm embarrassed about, but not as embarrassed as like half of the comments I read online, which were like, dead on arrival, won't even sell as good as the Wii U, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But even I am surprised. Like, I knew it would be a great console for me, but I didn't know how many Miis there were, you know?
Oh, right.
For me, it's absolutely perfect, because I've never really been a handheld gamer.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I always buy, you know, all the handheld systems, but, like, I rarely complete games on it because I'm not in commute very much. But, I played the Wii U on the gamepad a lot because I like console-style games.
Right.
But even then, I had this range, you know, you're still tethered, you know. The Switch is just perfect. I play mostly in handheld mode, but I'm still playing like a console game.
Right.
And then on my days when I'm not podcasting and I have the TV all to myself, well, then that's just pure joy. You're taking me away from my joy right now.
Oh, God. I mean, we can just end the podcast now, I guess.
No. This is my other joy.
Okay. Well, that's good. I tell you what, maybe in 2018, another one of those sales will go to me, because my kids really want to play Splatoon 2, and I really, really don't want them to tank my score. So
we'll just make another account for them.
I guess I could make another account.
I've got 6 accounts on my Switch right now. Like,
you're missing the point. It's not about the accounts. It's about the fact that I never got the red and blue controllers, and the only way to do it with a left blue and a right red is to get a flipping console. So if between those two things I can convince myself, hey, it's worth spending $300 on a console, $60 more on a second copy of Splatoon 2 so I can play locally, and then I got the controllers I want, well, you know, that's $360 well spent.
I just got the Splatoon colored controllers as an early birthday present from my wife, so I'm rocking the green and pink right now.
Oh, I should get those.
It looks so nice. And the joystick on my blue one was getting a little wonky. But I mean, it wasn't until like last month, so I don't know. I think it's just extreme use. And the fact that I have children.
Right.
With sticky fingers.
You can sponsor the Famicom Dojo video game podcast. Just head over to littlepodcast.com, find Famicom Dojo, and click on the sponsor button. Make sure you email us a message at podcast@famicomdojo.tv so we can read your message on the show. We'll try to make this more straightforward soon, I promise. And there are still some t-shirts left. Back orders are being filled now. Most of sizes small through extra large are still available. And for the price of a podcast sponsorship, you can get stuff. For just a little bit more, you can get a season 1 DVD as well as part of your t-shirt bundle. Already got a t-shirt? Why not get the DVD? Just head over to famicomdojo.tv/store and show your favorite dojo host a little love.
Now, obviously, parts of your life don't allow you to game all the time, but overall, how's your year with the Switch been?
Oh, man. I have enjoyed it. Like there are a lot of people where I work who picked one of these things up day one like I did.
Yeah.
And you know, we've been like talking about like Zelda. We've, you know, they've been talking about Xenoblade lately, which I haven't been playing. And so
get
all the references
it.
To the
get
older,
it. Get
the older
it.
Xenoblade crossover stuff is, yep. Is there. I mean, I was just seeing that, like, that, Chronicles, is on the, eShop. For
yeah.
the Wii U, so I
yeah.
could just pick that up too.
But I think I'll tell you what I told you last time, and I think it's still true, that if you do have the time, the first Xenoblade is definitely worth playing, but you can completely skip it without losing anything. There, the connection.
I suppose
that's like if you were holding out, you're like can't play Final Fantasy VI because they didn't release 5 in America. You know, you know, it is true that there's some wink and nods to previous things. There's a few cameos, but there's pretty much no reason you need to play the earlier games. And in fact, I would say that what's better is if you really, really like Xenoblade 2, you can go back and play the other one. But it's gonna feel a little archaic, the battle system, after you've played
right,
the,
right.
You
did,
played
you, 2. You did sell me on 2's battle system, which does sound pretty cool.
And when we were talking about it, last time, I only sort of understood it. Now I've got it now, and I just it's going to be very hard to go back to other role playing game systems. Like it's good.
Well, you know, those first 6 months I mentioned, I was playing Breath of the Wild, and
yeah.
so the Switch was like the Breath of the Wild console for
yeah.
me.
Yeah.
And like right down to the fact that, you know, I got the special edition of the game, which came with like a case that's fashioned like the tablet.
Oh yeah.
The Sheikah Slate.
I wish I had gotten that now, but to tell you the honest truth, I didn't want to spend that much because I didn't know if I would like it. I was
well,
young.
Here in the States, Best Buy has that Gamers Club dealio.
Oh, yeah,
and
yeah,
so
yeah.
it was $100 package, and I got it for $80. You know, so
yeah.
so that was like no brainer for me, and I wanted a carrying case because I knew I wanted to bring this thing around with me.
Yep,
so
yep.
so you know, then Splatoon 2 comes out, and
yep.
I tell you, like, I got into that game in a way that I did not with the original. Like I was leveling up and grinding and understanding better how the whole
yeah.
Thing with the leveling up your
yeah.
your equipment
yeah.
worked. But also I enjoy a bit better how the whole like primary, secondary weapon and special power thing works.
Oh yeah.
Than the first game, and I think I matched my level from the first game in maybe 2 or 3 weeks. Something like that. I played a lot.
I will say that with Splatoon 2, I've not played it nearly as much as the Wii version. But my daughter has played significantly more than me.
Okay.
And she's getting good.
Like esports good?
I mean, I don't know how good other 8-year-olds are, but she often will. I mean, when she wins a match or even loses a match, she's often first or second in score for.
Okay.
And she's not even that high rank right now. She's like, she's like level 13 right now.
Okay.
But you know, people with much higher ranks, she's scoring better than. So. I don't know. Maybe it's just because she, you know, started early so she can understand the mechanics more than an old fogey like me, who this is really his first online shooter. So, she's great. And the other day she was like, I was playing and she was watching me and she's like, Dad, do you want me to give you a few hints? And I'm like, oh, come on. I'm like, yes. But like it's one of the reasons I don't play Splatoon much is because any time I'm playing when my kids are home, my daughter will immediately go Switch to me. You know, she. So yeah, I need to get another Switch as well.
See, there you go. There you go. Well, actually, you probably need to get another Switch and then like just let her have the one that you're playing on now.
Well, she's got this game called Sumiko Gurashi. It's like it's like Mario Party if Mario Party like took place on sedatives underwater.
Oh, geez.
I mean, it's really slow. It's really like do-do-do-do-do. It's just a mini game compilation that's – but it's – I guess it's cute, but I don't know. My daughters like it a lot, but, you know, that gets a lot of – that's the thing. There's this system is used by a lot more than me, so I was looking at the number of hours logged onto the machine, and it's quite a bit, but then – but then I go into like my daughter's play too, and she's got an almost equivalent number of hours, just different games.
Right.
You know what? Bomberman is still wonderful, and just the amount of updates that this thing has been receiving, just amazing. But I brought it to a party 2 weeks ago, and. We only had three controllers at the time, but just had a blast. Oh, just had a blast with Bomberman. But I don't know. I've been pleased with it. Just amazing. Nintendo's first party output is wonderful.
Right.
And there are notable third-party software titles being released, and it is definitely the indie machine of choice right now.
Yeah, I think there was an article by Chris Kohler, was it? Oh boy. Yeah. I'm gonna get this wrong. Or maybe it was who's the other guy? I'm probably thinking of.
Who's the other guy?
You Jeremy.
Jeremy Parrish?
Yeah. Jeremy Parrish, probably.
Yeah.
Who first made me realize that Nintendo's doing something really special with the Switch by giving these third parties so much shelf space, which I'm sure we've mentioned on the show before, but we first mentioned it in the first version of this podcast, and I want to make sure that we mention it in this version, too.
Yes.
So it's all in one place. Like you know, that's what you see on shelves are these really great games not made by these big box publishers who just you know, I'm honestly worried for companies like EA that are trying to make everything into microtransactions.
Yeah.
And as much as I love Dragon Age, here there's going to be a quote unquote live system just turns my stomach.
Yep.
So Nintendo's doing two things that I've really wanted from them for a long time. They're curating good software.
Yep.
You know, things that I might have been like, oh, is that on Steam? Maybe I'll play it. And now I'm paying, you know, like a lot more for it. But then that quote unquote a lot more isn't automatically $60 or even $50. Sometimes it's $20 or $30 or $40. And that's the thing I've wanted from physical releases for a long time, and they're doing that. Now, I haven't spent that money yet, but I'm planning on picking up the full version of Simperclips now, for instance, like pretty soon.
Good. I bought the regular Snipperclips for $15, and I enjoyed it a lot. But I'm not gonna, even though it would be cheaper for me to just get the DLC for Snipperclips, I'm gonna buy the cased version because it's what, $30 or something?
Yeah, $30.
It's really cheap, and like I've picked up a number of really good $30 titles. I got a Cave Story Plus. It was $30 and came with a soundtrack.
Right.
I'm just so happy to see, like, not just. I'm happy to see single A games returning.
Okay, sure.
You know, not just triple A. You know, I'm so happy to see. Yeah, yay! Physical is back for now.
For now.
And maybe that's one of the reasons EA is just not on board, because they don't. They're very much hoping physical games die.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
They're doing everything they can, you know. I mean, you know, they've got their own, like, not streaming network, but like subscription network through the Xbox.
Yeah.
With what is it? EA Direct, EA something, Game Pass.
I wouldn't know.
EA whatever. It doesn't matter. But you could have saved some money if you got that, because Mass Effect Andromeda is on that. You would have found out within that first trial month that it was. Okay. Hold on.
Yeah.
Has the Switch done to you what it's kind of done for me, in that it has made me really not play any other modern platforms?
Yeah, absolutely. I don't know when the last time was I turned on my PS4 that wasn't to play a Blu-ray.
Yeah. I have my PlayStation 3 or whatever, and there's a lot of games that I really, really want to finish on it, and I have my Vita, which I was, before Switch came out, I was really getting into. I mean, if you listened to some of our older podcasts, you can see that I was, but this thing has just kind of replaced everything for me other than retro systems. Basically, my gaming this year has been Nintendo Switch, Sega Saturn, PC Engine, Famicom, Super Famicom. But like, if I want to play a newer game, it's kind of strange. It's like, if it's not on the Switch, I just don't. I can't be bothered. Mm-hmm. And I know that sounds complete fanboy-y, you know, because I know one of the biggest complaints that other gamers have had is whenever a game is announced, one of the first comments is always like, Switch version, you know?
Yeah.
But I totally get it, because I think that if it's on Switch, there's the likelihood that I'll beat it. And if it's right on another console, that's great that it exists, but I probably won't buy it, and I probably won't beat it.
Well, I mean, like, to begin with, I got my PS4 mostly so I could play Dragon Age Inquisition, which I think I could have played on my 360, but I wanted a next-gen platform and a better Blu-ray player.
Yeah,
so I had two reasons. And then, you know, the Amplitude sequel came out, and I got that because that's locked into Sony's branding because they're part owners of the IP. But then there's Shenmue 3, which, well, it might come out.
It'll
I pledged for it.
Yeah, me too. Although I also pledged for Blood something. The
Castlevania thing. Yeah.
Oh my gosh, why can't I remember? You know what?
It must have been pretty good.
It's so long ago that I pledged for it that I don't even remember. Bloodstained. I think that's it. I better find out before I look totally stupid.
I think it's too late.
It is. It's Bloodstained Ritual of the Night. Yes.
Okay. Oh, okay. All right. Well, what do I know?
But I pledged for that when it was going to be a Wii U title.
All right.
And then when they said they weren't going to have a Wii U version, I was like, okay, that'll be another reason for me to get a PlayStation 4, because Shenmue's for PlayStation 4, and of course, I've already bought a PlayStation 4 game. I bought Valkyria Chronicles Remaster. Mm-hmm. I bought that because I love that series. But now the new one of that is coming out on Switch, and Bloodstain's coming out on the Switch. Like,
yeah.
Like. Mm-hmm. Like, if Shenmue makes the transition, which I don't know if it can. I think Sony's mixed up in there somewhere. You know?
Yeah, I believe that was the case where they were funding part of the game, but then they went to the fans for the rest of it.
Yeah.
I think there was some uproar about that. We should probably listen to our old episode.
Yeah, we should. I don't know exactly how that's going down, but like, I need a certain number of games before I'll buy a new console. Usually like 3 games I know I'm going to love, or like 10 games that I sort of think I'm going to like, you know?
Mm.
And right now for PlayStation 4, I mean, we've got Shenmue coming out, and I'd like to play Parappa again. No, I'm missing some. I'm definitely. I mean, Last of Us 2, that'll be one. I'm excited to try, I guess, the new Red Dead game.
Wait a minute. There's a Last of Us 2 coming out?
Yeah.
Oh, I am so there.
Yeah. So
I still haven't finished. I completely forgot about that game. I'm so sorry. That wasn't the last PS4 thing I played. It's a PS3 game, but I bought the PS4 version of it. And that came with the crap, what's it called? The DLC. Whatever. I haven't played that yet because I the game so affected me. Like I was like emotionally couldn't go through with it. And I want to go back to it now, but I'm afraid I've forgotten the mechanics. But anyway, hearing that makes me happy because it might mean, well, I guess I shouldn't be too happy. It's probably just more sadness, kind of like watching Black Mirror.
Yeah. But anyway, that game's coming out. That one's going to be great. The problem is I don't care much for shooters. And for the most part, Western RPGs don't do so much for me. So and indie games now I like to play, on the go. So I'm trying to see what PlayStation 4 has for me. And actually, the listeners, if you've been listening to this podcast for a while, you kind of know what sort of games I'm into. Sell me on a PlayStation 4, because I mean I'll get one eventually. I'll even get an Xbox One eventually, because that's what I do, because I'm crazy. But to get one right now, I was gonna say Persona 5, but I can get that on PlayStation 3. Persona 5, that's one. That's definitely one. And that's the thing. Like I'm trying to find exclusive reasons for me to jump in, and I'm hoping there will be, because I do like the idea of a very powerful console to supplement my fun console.
But where are the games?
There's so many games for PlayStation 4.
Where are the ones I want to play?
That's the thing. I think I'm not the kind of gamer that the PlayStation 4 is marketed to anymore, which is strange. Final Fantasy 15. I want to play Final Fantasy 15. That's a game I want to play. I think if it would have come out 10 years earlier, I would have been a little more hyped for it. But I don't know.
So going back to your question about what the Switch did for me, the fact that console and Breath of the Wild came out the same month as Mass Effect Andromeda, which I was already kind of lukewarm about.
Yep.
I mean, that kind of says it all right there. Like, I did put that game in, but I had been playing Breath of the Wild for weeks. And I'm like, how am I going to get both of these massive games in my itinerary? It doesn't make any sense.
Yep.
So I put it in, and I was immediately turned off by Andromeda. Like, the way the camera sat was super weird compared to Breath of the Wild and compared to the other Mass Effect games I had played. The controls were wonky. I was having this really hard time stowing my weapon. Like, the fact that I had to push that massive big faceplate button on the PS4 version to stow it was super weird. I would pull my weapon out and it would do the zoom in zoom out thing, and I wasn't doing anything weird. It was just not working, and I had such a problem with it. And I said, all right, whatever, I'm going to finish Zelda and come back to this. And I did try it again. I got basically past the intro of the game, and then I stopped, because it was so strange. And then all the videos about how bad the facial animations were and how obviously rushed the development of this game was. And I guess in that last year, there has been updates to the animations and shading and other things that have improved that, but the damage was done, man.
Yeah.
Like I, you know, I My thing about playing a BioWare game is I usually like sit there with my video capture device and make notes about where the save progress is and want to come back to it later to make an awesome video. I just couldn't do it. And I'm the only one that feels that way because EA ended up shuttering that studio, which is heartbreaking. Like,
but I mean, that studio wasn't the Mass Effect studio that made made the trilogy that you loved. So,
No. They've all moved on.
But still, yeah.
It makes me worried for what's going to happen with Dragon Age 4.
Games as a service.
Yeah, the whole thing about the live component, and it definitely got to toe the publisher's line, or they might get shuttered too.
Yeah,
but I tell you, I played Dragon Age Inquisition, and it was the best of the series so far. And I've heard that Mass Effect Andromeda is like Inquisition in space, which sounds cool as a concept to me.
Yeah,
I don't know where they're gonna go with it, and it's been a year. It's been a year, Vink. I haven't really played Andromeda, and I don't really feel like going back to it.
I hear you. When I started getting to the first Mass Effect, first of all, I couldn't read anything, so I had to get a new TV.
Right.
So I got a new TV to hook it up to, and then I started playing it, and I was enjoying it, and then my PlayStation 3 broke.
Mm-hmm.
And so I got another PlayStation 3, hooked it up to that new TV, and that was very soon before the Switch came out.
Mm-hmm.
And now, if I think they really need to put the trilogy on the Switch, or I don't know if I'm ever going to play it.
Well, they're not going to do that.
They're not going to do that, because it would make sense.
Well, here's the thing. They put Mass Effect 3... on the Wii U at the same time they're releasing Trilogy and everything else.
Yep.
You know, and it costs the exact same, like a 60 bucks for three games or 60 bucks for one game.
Yep.
You know, they're not going to spend the time to go through and port the other two games. And then, you know, it wasn't immediate, but after a while, you know, it was in the bargain bin. And I think I got my copy for like $13.
Yep.
Because I really wanted to do a comparison video, and that was like 2013. Yep. You know, I gotta say, it looked real nice on the Wii U.
Oh yeah,
it looked real nice.
Yep.
But you know, the EA is just not gonna do it. It can run the Frostbite engine.
Yeah,
it absolutely can. So, that's what I want to see.
They haven't ported the Frostbite engine, though. I mean, it definitely could.
It's capable as well.
Oh, of course, the PlayStation didn't the PlayStation 3 have a port of the Frostbite engine? I don't know. But I know the iPhone does.
It must have, because I think they did Dragon Age Inquisition and Frostbite, and there's a port for it in the 360.
But I guess the thing that I'm seeing, though, is like there's no EA games on the Switch, and I don't care. Like,
apart from
a little
FIFA.
Bit. No, I don't. Yeah, FIFA. Yeah, whatever. Like, I've heard, and I don't know if this is true, in fact, but it would make sense, but that FIFA is only on the Switch because part of the licensing agreement to have FIFA exclusive is that they have to release at least one version for every console, because otherwise it's a missed opportunity or something like that. And I don't know if that's true, but that would make sense, because otherwise why even do it if you really hate the console that much, you know?
Right.
I'm tired of test games. I'm sick of it. I'm sick of companies going, well, if this one sells, you'll get this game. No, from now on, I only support people who don't do test games. Like Bethesda, I'll buy the Bethesda games, because they were like, yeah, we'll give it a try with the Switch, you know. I was going to buy L.A. Noire, Rockstar, if you're listening. I was going to buy L.A. Noire until I found out the game's not on the cartridge. Thanks.
Right.
I mean, I get it. The cartridges are expensive to go to a larger size, you know? But if you're already charging 50 bucks for a game that's that old, you know, pay for this slightly larger cartridge size, and I'll give you your 50 bucks, you know? I will. I'd pay 50 bucks for a game that I hadn't played that I've heard good things about.
Right, right.
But I'm not. But I'm not going to pay $50 for an empty cartridge and having to buy a larger SD card. You know,
mm-hmm.
that no, not gonna do it. Well, I think I just dated myself there. That's a George Herbert Walker Bush, as portrayed by Dana Carvey reference.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Obscure references about.
And now, a haiku. Handheld joy machine. Many configurations. Librib or Lyrib. Should we talk about our launch experience? Because, I mean, we have a video about it. But,
we do. We do. Yeah, we didn't talk about that.
Man,
yeah.
That was a thing.
I know I was only delayed for like 2 days. And there are still people who can't get a Switch. So, like.
Right.
It's not that bad. But I was so upset. I was so mad at Amazon. I was like on their customer support. I'm like, do you realize that you missed my birthday? They don't care.
Oh, sorry.
They don't care at all. They don't care at all. But, like.
Well, yeah, it's so funny how that turned out because. Yeah. Because I didn't have any plans. I wasn't sure I was going to have the money to get one.
Yep.
You know, I wasn't sure I was going to be able to wait in line to get one. And then things kind of fell into place, and I was going to wait with Phil in line.
Yep.
You know, because it had been that was 2017. So it had been a little more than 10 years since we did the Wii launch video.
Yep. Yep.
Right. And I'm thinking to myself, like, man, you know, the Wii U thing launch wasn't a big thing. And I'm kind of getting down on myself. It's like, you know, we all excited to like do that. And there was like no lines anywhere really.
Yep.
And I'm like, well, you know, online orders and everything. And, you know, I didn't get an online order. That was the big problem.
Yep.
Like I tried. And then it was sold out, and it never came back in the stock except for these GameStop bundles, right?
Yeah.
So I was going to do that. That's where, like, Phil got his. And then eventually I heard from him that it's like, oh, you know, if you didn't pre-order, if you didn't buy anything through them, they don't have any extras.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, okay. So I called Best Buy.
Yep.
The same one we filmed at for the last two launch specials on the west side of Madison.
Oh,
there.
I didn't realize that was the same one.
Yeah. They were super coy. It was very strange.
Yeah.
But they told me that, you know, they do have some pre-orders, but, you know, they have some overstock that they'll be handing out tickets for.
Uh-huh.
And that people have been lining up for 3 hours already. And I'm like, all right, I am not going to come unless I have some hope of getting it. It's like, yeah, if you get here in the next 15 minutes, you might have a chance. I'm like, all right, that's enough for me. So I had to like race to Target. And it's like, well, maybe there's like a line at Target. And it turns out Target didn't open until 6 a.m. or something like that. It's like,
yeah.
All right, forget that. I'm not doing that at Target. But I was there to like get gloves because it was a cold night. It was a cold night.
A dark and stormy night. Okay.
And I had bought some new equipment. So I got like a light that I can use, you know, because it was going to be nighttime. I got like a boom mic, and I got all this cool stuff for the launch episode.
Yeah.
And I was all set to go, and I used none of it because it was so cold, the camera refused to work.
How cold was it? Oh, sorry. You already told me the camera refused to work.
Yeah.
Okay.
But, you know, I got in line. I was talking to some cool people.
Yeah.
And it was, as I mentioned, quite cold, and
yeah.
like to the point that I was losing feeling in my fingers and toes and trying to keep them warm.
Yeah.
You know, Phil, since he had a guaranteed one waiting for him at GameStop, volunteered to get me some hand warmers and whatnot,
yeah.
and that was very nice of him. But that line, like, it rivaled the Wii's launch line.
Really?
Yeah, and we only had to wait until midnight and not, like, 8 a.m. the next morning or something like that. Not that I could have survived.
Yeah,
I don't think.
Yeah, you would have died. Wisconsin is a terrible place for for lining up for anything.
But man, I got in there. I got in there and I was so happy to be warm. But I got in there and like I didn't realize how long this line was because it was snaking through like, you know, the main entrance there. And it's like they have these displays out. They have all like the Zelda amiibo and the pro controllers. And I'm like, I don't know if I was going to get one. I'll pick one up because who knows when I'm going to get one again. And that was a smart move because guess what? It took months. So I got my Switch. No colored controllers, like I've mentioned before. I got Zelda, which I pre-ordered. So I at least got that much. And then I got the pro controller. And then we made a video. And you.
Yeah. This is so... Because, I mean, unfortunately, we didn't have podcasts out at that time. But, like, I wish you guys could have heard about how smug I was.
He was so smug, you guys.
And absolutely, like... But you also were really down on your prospects of getting one at all.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So remember, the idea for the video was we were gonna have you be out in the cold and see you miserable.
Yeah.
And then in the end, you don't get one. And they go, right. What was your launch experience, right? And we were going to have a video of the UPS guy, or like not UPS, but the delivery guy handing me one and me going, mm-hmm. It was okay. It was a... You know, or something like, it was cold when I opened the door to get my delivery. You know, something.
Right.
It was going to be the joke of like, because I was sitting on a pre-order that I'd got months before. And I was, you know, I didn't have to do anything. Amazon was just going to deliver it to my door. And, you know, I had the Prime shipping, so I thought I'd have it on launch day. Meanwhile, I'm watching your video before I have my Switch. Like... I'm watching the raw footage you have of your video, and we're trying to figure out how we're going to even make this video work, because I don't have one yet. It took several days. So we recorded a video of me just sitting there yelling and screaming and being angry,
mm-hmm.
or whatever, and then that was going to be the video, because we wanted to get it out as soon as possible, because we didn't want to miss our window. But like just about an hour after I was, you know, going to give up and just send you the footage I had, it came. And so we did something where my kids delivered it to me and how I didn't even care anymore. It turned out to be a good video, but it's completely different than the video we had planned to make for Switch launch day. Completely different. Like you could probably say karmic.
right. Yes. So good. Watch that video. We'll link it in the show notes.
Yes.
If you haven't seen it already, it's a lot of fun. Like I have a little bit of footage outside. Mostly I think it starts where I'm in the car afterwards, finally warming up.
I think we see the delivery of the hand warmers in the video. Yes.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, he didn't quite make it. So what happened was I got my ticket. Right, I waited long enough to get the ticket, and then I had like an hour before they opened the doors finally.
Yeah.
So I was in there making the video with Phil.
Yeah.
And Amber too. Hi, Amber.
Yep.
We're like watching the door to see if they're going to open it before midnight, and sure enough, people are lining up again. So like, oop, gotta go. So.
Yep.
Yeah. So I got a little bit more footage now that the camera had a chance to warm up, but oh man. Just going back to Phil's place and like sifting through everything was really, really cool. I hope it's fun for you guys to watch, even though it's been a year and you probably have access to a Switch if you've wanted one already. So it won't mean as much, but there's also, I did an unboxing, a separate unboxing video about special edition of Zelda. So
what is that video called? Is it just Zelda unboxing?
Yeah. It's like Breath of the Wild unboxing.
Okay, because I've got an unboxing video coming up as well. I filmed it last night along with, my wife helped film, which was admittedly embarrassing because the game, and this is my future retro for this week.
Okay.
My future retro is Bayonetta 1 and 2 Climax Edition. Like, everything about this game is super cool, but hard to explain to a significant other.
Uh-huh.
I just like I wish the commentary, the things my wife said after, because she was very professional. While she was filming, she didn't say any words, just gave me constant looks. but at the end, she's like, "So what's this game about exactly? Are her shoes guns?" I'm like, "Yes, they are." She's like, "Don't play that around our kids." And I'm like, "Yeah, okay, sorry." I filmed this unboxing of the Bayonetta 1 and 2 ridiculously limited edition, which I happily paid for, because it is the only way to get a Switch cartridge of the first Bayonetta. Bayonetta 2 is on a cartridge, and inside the case, you get a download code for the first Bayonetta.
Okay.
And that's great and all, but I'm deeply troubled by digital downloads. So,
right, as you should be.
I need my cartridge. Until they make a digital download that will taste terrible if I lick it, I'm going to stick with Switch cartridges. Hey, that's something we didn't talk about. You ever Switch, lick a Switch? What?
Yes. It's in that video, the unboxing video. It's the first thing you see.
Oh yes. The physical edition, it's about $100, so it's not super cheap, and it comes with the same two games that the others do, but it has two cases in there. Actually, three cases in there. It has a separate Bayonetta case, a separate Bayonetta 2 case with all the art and everything, and inside art as well. And then it's also got a steelbook in that actually has two card slots, which is the only one made, I suppose, because I can't imagine that any other release is going to have two Switch cards in it. So, and like, they went through all this trouble to make this thing, and then they had like, I have no idea how many copies, but probably under 5,000 copies made. Because it's limited to Japan. They released this edition in Europe as well, but without the physical Bayonetta 1 card. Still just a code. It's just like, but like, the game itself is completely like region free and has all the English on it. You know, it's exactly the same as your download's going to be. It's just that it's on physical media. But anyway, I did an unboxing of this. It's really quite an amazing little package. And we'll get that
I
up.
Bet it is.
Yeah.
She's going to get it up soon.
She's got guns for feet. I mean, not for feet. I mean, on her feet.
For guns.
I guess I have a thing for games where the female characters have firearms where feet should be. No more heroes? No more heroes? Yeah?
Fire feet. I still feel bad that I did not get the original Wii U version. I got it for you.
Yes, you
so
did.
So that you could have it. And I was like, I'll get my copy later, not realizing two things. One, this thing is never going to go down in price.
Yep.
And two, they released a version without Bayonetta 1 in it.
Yep.
So.
You snoozed and lost.
That was a mistake. You think I would have learned that after Pikmin 2.
Yeah.
But no.
No.
Although you can get Pikmin 2 on the Wii U eShop for $20, so.
Oh, that's nice.
Who's laughing now?
Well, I mean, you could say the same for Xenoblade. I made you buy that for me day one.
Right.
And you didn't buy a copy for yourself.
Well, I mean, in that case, we knew it was selling out and it would be sold out.
Yep.
And, you know, I knew there was a chance I wouldn't get it, but I guess I didn't realize how bad it was going to be. And that was the whole, like, scandal where they did the thing where the used copies sold for more, so they'd open up.
Yep. That was pretty dirty. But anyway, again, you have the option now to get that one for $20. So
Right. So between those two things, I probably save money in the long run. And then I've gotten the other thing I always wanted was a copy of Twilight Princess for the GameCube, waiting for that to go down in price, which never happened. But now I have the HD version, so it's better, and it's still left in the link. So what are you going to do?
Hey.
Future Retro is a segment where we talk about contemporary video games that have the potential to be remembered as classics.
Or classics that we've played for the first time, or just more recently.
And in Pile of Shame, we talk about the games we haven't been playing, and try to convince each other if we should.
Or not.
I should probably get into Future Retro. Bayonetta is a wonderful game that I have now, what do you call it, quadruple dipped?
Sure.
I have it on PlayStation 3 where it was terrible. I have it on Xbox 360 where it was great. This is the order I've bought them in. The Wii U version, which is about the same as the Xbox 360 version, except for the fact that you can play as beloved Nintendo characters in a all slutted up. I mean, you want your female Link? There you go.
Yeah.
And now for the fourth time, I didn't buy the PC version because I can't quintuple dip in good conscience. But confession. I've never beat any of these versions. But I got quite close on the Wii U version. I got quite close. I got pretty far, but like it's one of those games that rates how well you do each stage, like gold or platinum, and allows you to replay them. And I sort of got obsessed with replaying the old stages too, and I never finished the game.
Oh, man.
Plus, I think I put it on a difficulty level a little bit beyond my skill level from the beginning, because the first one that they give you as an option is normal. But actually, that's the highest level you can play it with at first.
Okay.
You unlock higher. But I thought normal would mean in the middle. You know what I mean? Like, I thought there'd be higher difficulties up there. But that's the highest difficulty for a first playthrough. And as anybody who's watched me play video games knows, I should have put it on very easy, which is probably how I'm going to play it for the first time on Switch. But looking forward to that one. Anyway, Bayonetta is a wonderful game. Platinum Games. And it's one of the reasons, if you like that type of game, Devil May Cry type game, character action games, then you probably should have a Switch, because Bayonetta 2 is Switch exclusive and Bayonetta 3 will also be.
Yes. When is that supposed to come out?
You know what? Normally, I'd predict that it would be a 2019 title. That would be my normal prediction. But Nintendo has surprised me a lot this year. Like, I didn't think Xenoblade 2 would be a launch year title, you know?
Okay.
And a lot of other games have come out a lot sooner than I expected them to. So who knows? It could be Christmas. But I'm still thinking 2019.
Okay.
Yeah. But, because, I mean, we haven't seen any gameplay footage of it yet. But then again, Nintendo has been playing their cards pretty close to their chest recently, so I don't know. So, but I would say you have ample time to play the first two.
Okay.
You should.
Boy, I really need to focus on what my next game is going to be.
Okay, in that case, Xenoblade Chronicles 2, because I want to talk to you about it.
Okay.
Yeah, do that one.
We'll see.
All right. Okay, well, tell me what your next one is going to be, because if you go into Skyrim, I'll pick up Skyrim 2 and we can play it together.
Oh, wow. All right. I will let you know. How about that?
Okay, but if you
play the power.
You should play Xenoblade Chronicles, but I've already pre-ordered Dark Souls. I've never played a Dark Souls game.
But I've
played a lot of like other From Software titles, like Kingsfield and stuff like that, which were also ridiculously difficult. You know,
this is a big deal for sure.
It is.
Okay.
Oh, by the way, 32. 32 games I have for my Switch.
Ah, boy.
While you were talking about Zelda, I downloaded a game.
Oh, good grief.
Well, preloaded. Old Man's Journey?
Oh, yeah. Okay.
I don't know. I know nothing about it, but it looks like an adventure game, and I don't know. I'll tell you if it's good.
Okay.
It looks good.
It reminds me of Oxenfree.
Yeah, right?
When I went to look it up, I actually found a full playthrough. So I thought I was watching a trailer, but it seems like it's the actual game. And I'm like, I don't even know what's happening. I am very intrigued.
Okay. Yeah, it's $10. Yeah, so, yeah. I just preloaded that. It's going to unlock in 2 days.
All right. Well, consider it sold. Oh, boy. What have I done?
Anyway, Bayonetta, my future retro, and look forward to the unboxing video. What do you got for me?
All right. So I've been mentioning it the last few episodes, but I finally want to talk about, in a lot more depth, Samus Returns for the 3DS. But Ooh. Before I do that,
okay,
I want to talk about what a pain in the butt it was to play this game for me. Because,
oh, really?
Yeah, my 3DS, and this is also due to the Switch, has been dormant for a year. And apparently I left the battery drained that entire time.
Okay. Oh, did that? Oh, I know where this is going now. It fucks your battery, right? Yeah.
So, it was already having kind of weird problems, and I think there might be an issue with it with the power jack.
Yeah.
Honestly, or maybe it's just my charger, and I got to get a new charger. I didn't get to test this theory out. Yeah. But the thing could not hold a charge. Like I would leave it plugged in for like 2 or 3 days and the orange light would never go off. And I remember it used to go off.
Yeah.
Very, very strange behavior. And then I'd play and I'd get maybe 10, 15 minutes in and the thing would start flashing at me. Yeah. And if I left it plugged in, it wouldn't do the normal like regular flashing. It would start like, you know, blinking at these really bizarre intermittent rates. Until it finally died. So imagine playing this very interesting game, stuck to a wall, and never knowing when the thing was going to finally peter out, and then you have to leave it alone for at least a day before you can get another 10 minutes into it. That was my experience trying to play this game at first.
By the way, I mean, I'll let you finish, but that story is terrifying to me right now.
Oh, boy.
No, because that represents any of these devices we have that have non-replaceable batteries. Like that, you're lucky that the 3DS has a replaceable battery. But for how long can you buy those batteries?
That is a great question.
I'm sure there'll be an enthusiast market making them for a while. But like my Switch, it's probably got 1,000 charge cycles until it starts. You know, it's going to start losing.
Okay.
And I don't know. I don't know. Like, that's why I'm really hoping they get cloud saves soon, because you know what?
Right.
4 years in, I'm willing to buy a new Switch, but if I can't transfer my saves,
right.
That's a big problem. I can understand them not putting in, you know, user replaceable batteries because space but like I don't feel I'm skillful enough to replace a battery myself, and it scares me that for using as a legacy that in the future I might be only able to play a Switch docked.
Right. Yep.
So
that is something to be concerned about.
But you know what? I'll be concerned about it later.
So I ordered a battery online, but before I did that, I had remembered something important. Doing a video many years ago, which is now available online for everyone to peruse. I'll put that in the show notes too. About the Wii U Pro controller, I remembered that it uses the exact same battery as a 3DS.
Oh, so that's user replaceable.
Yes, that's user replaceable. And there's like one screw that holds it in place too. So I'm like, bonus. All right, I'm going to do this. So I pop the thing open. Sure enough, you know, look at the model number. It's like, yep, that's definitely a 3DS battery. And then I pop open my 3DS, and it is the wrong size because I have a 3DS XL.
Ah, they have different batteries. That makes sense. Bigger screen's going to take more power. Okay.
They're similar. It's just that the 3DX XL one is longer, and I think it has a different amperage.
Okay.
So I didn't really want to stick it in there, even though I think the pins would have lined up. I really didn't want to do that.
Okay.
And it probably wouldn't have worked anyway, right? So I'm like, all right, I'll just I went online, went to the Nintendo's online store, bought myself a new 3DS XL battery. I also got myself the larger replacement battery for the Wii U gamepad.
Okay.
And if you've ever opened up your Wii U gamepad, I don't know if you have. There's only two screws that holds the battery cartridge in place, right? This is a little tiny, small battery in there.
I know,
right?
in this giant space for a battery, yeah.
What's super interesting is that, like, if you take that out, there's actually two sets of contacts, and that the larger battery actually sits in a different orientation.
Right,
and uses different pins. Like, what sense does that make? I don't know. I don't know why they couldn't have put a nicer, larger battery in the Wii U in the first place, but they were probably cutting costs to keep it under, was it $350 when it first came out? Something like that.
Well, I mean, there's also the thing that maybe the larger battery would also have added to the weight, which people were already complaining about.
Sure.
How heavy this thing was. So,
right.
I mean, I'm sure it was a combination of the two things, but they, like, later on, you know, they did, of course, offer, you know, you could buy those batteries. But
Wii U, they're pricey batteries too.
Come on, Wii U, the gamepad right. is region locked. It's like, come on. But as I said, the Wii U died for our sins. So.
No kidding. Yeah. So I'm waiting for this battery to come, trying to get in as much sandwich returns as I can.
Yeah.
And it finally does come. And I pop it in, charge it for a bit. I'm having a lot of the same problems though. Like, the orange light won't go off. It won't charge any more than 3/4 of the way. So I'm guessing the 3DS itself has some problems. I've learned two things though as a result of this experience. One is that Nintendo sells refurbished new 3DS, like not the XL ones, but like the regular sized ones, which I'm kind of interested in getting.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like the XL is too big, honestly. And I like the colored buttons on the and the faceplate changing and stuff on the new 3DS.
Yeah.
But also it's like $100, $120, I forget, somewhere around there.
Something like that, yeah. It's
so
cheap.
I feel like if I'm going to replace my 3DS, I'll probably go that route. But the second thing I learned was that I would definitely not get a 2DS XL, and that's because they are not battery serviceable by the consumer.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they're the only ones. I'm trying to remember which models line up to each other.
Yeah.
For the battery sizes, and I thought that it said that the same battery's in the 2DS XL as the 3DS XL, but you can't actually service it.
Yeah.
So I'm not entirely certain there, but
I think the 2DS though is meant to be something you give to a kid anyway, and you know they're gonna break it before the battery dies. So
right. I mean, the 2DS XL is a nice looking piece of hardware, but I really have no clue how sturdy it is comparatively. But
it's probably one of the sturdiest ones. I think it's made to be dropped. You know, it looks like Fisher Price's My First Video Game System. So, you know,
well, I'm bringing all this up, not just to color my particular experience, but also because I think this might be the last 3DS story I ever tell, because this might be the last 3DS game I ever play.
But honestly, aren't you excited for? Hold on, there's something coming. I mean, there's a few third-party titles that are still coming out. There's like, I don't know if you play any Atlas RPGs, but there's a few coming out there. And there's, you're right, this is probably the end.
I haven't carried around my 3DS to conventions. And like basically, since I got my Switch, I haven't carried it around to conventions at all. I brought the Switch with me instead. You know, Street Pass is gone, but like, it was always kind of busy work and not a lot of fun for me anyway.
Yeah.
But you know, there's some interesting ideas.
My daughter's playing Pokemon Sun Moon, but I'm pretty much moved on. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think I'm going to play this game, and that's going to be it for me. Honestly, I have to finish Majora's Mask, I guess, on the 3DS. But I guess I could just buy it on the Wii U and play the original version. But so Samus Returns itself is something I've actually been really excited for, and now it makes sense that Nintendo killed that one Metroid 2 remake, because that is kind of what Samus Returns is. It's like a reimagining of Metroid 2, not so much. It's less like Zero Mission, and more like Star Fox 64.
Oh, okay. Or like Silent Hill was kind of reimagined as a Silent Hill Shattered Memories on the Wii.
Oh, was it? Okay.
It's kind of like, I mean, it's a very different game, but like it's kind of the same setting, and they both kind of tell a similar story, but it's different enough that it's a totally different game.
Okay, yeah. Well, you know, I've wanted people to be able to play Metroid 2 for such a long time, because I feel like it's such an important evolution in the Metroid series, no pun intended.
Okay.
But you know, and it's on the 3DS Virtual Console, so I have it there too.
Hmm.
But you know, the game has no map. It did introduce a lot of interesting new features like the spider ball and stuff.
Yeah.
But it was I guess better than the original Metroid, but also very different, and also, you know, Super Metroid was such a departure from it, and like every 2D Metroid game has kind of had to be beholden to Super Metroid, and this one is no exception.
Okay.
But they've added a lot of interesting things to the mechanics. It uses the shoulder buttons, which I think you used to use in Super Metroid to cycle through your weapons.
Yeah, something like that.
If I'm remembering correctly. This game uses the second screen to do some quick weapon selections instead.
Okay.
So that frees up the face buttons and the shoulder buttons to actually be used for game mechanics. So in this case, you hold one button down to switch between your missiles and your regular shooting. And the other one is used for 360-degree aiming.
Oh.
Which is super nice. Like Samus will like stand still and then move her arm around while you got this button pushed down, and that's really nice because of the way that enemies move in this game.
Yeah,
they've added some new stuff like there's a melee attack, which is kind of like a counter, and I didn't really understand how to use this very well. Like there were some enemies where they kind of directed you to show you what it did. But some enemies you can't really shoot unless you leave them defenseless, and you got to let them attack you first, and then you melee them, and you're able to shoot them finally. And I didn't realize how many enemies this applied to, and was sort of like deftly trying to avoid them in certain areas until I realized, oh, I can just stun them and then blow them to hell.
So one of the things that I remember about playing Metroid 2 on the Game Boy was, your character takes up a lot more screen than like in the original NES Metroid. And part of that added a little bit to the tension. Like you couldn't really see what was around the corner until you got there. Is that retained at all in this 3DS game?
No. Well, it's 2.5D, right? So everything's 3D rendered.
Yeah.
But you're still in this 2D side scrolling space. But, and I think I mentioned this in an earlier episode, I feel like this is the most interesting use of the actual like 3D mechanic.
Yes, you mentioned, yeah.
And it's so awesome, like the detail they stick into these backgrounds. Like they've stuck Chozo ruins all over the place. Or like if you're in like in this vast cavernous area, like there'd be no background in the original game, right? Because it was four colors. So they couldn't do a lot, but like in this one, you might have like this sprawling pyramid structure and there's like cascading waterfalls in the background and stuff. And then like you like watch the water like pool towards you, like running in a river by you, and like you eventually will jump over it. But like you can see it off in the distance for a long time before you come to the obstacle, you know? Or there's like, you know, piping and like mine shafts and like things that make it feel like a real lived in planet. But in a way, it's almost distracting because if you've played something like Other M, where you can move in three dimensions in certain spots,
yeah.
and you can't do this in that game at all, it's kind of weird and disorienting to think, why can't I explore this really cool thing in the background? Right?
Yeah. And,
but it's yeah. it's immersive and nice. I like it. I do like it a lot. It's a really great way to make the Metroid world come alive.
Okay, so where does it fall for you? Have you completed it yet?
I haven't. I'm in area okay. 4 right now. I got to area 3 and got stuck. And okay. I eventually cheated and looked at a map to see, like, this is one Metroid I'm missing. I got 9 out of 10 in the area. And I could not find where that 10th one was. So I looked at the map. I was like, oh, I basically got it. I just didn't look in this one spot. But I found out through looking through the message boards that some people, got to this part of the game and gave up.
Because
it was – the puzzle solving there was a little obtuse. The original game was a lot more straightforward, you know. There was no map, so you kind of had to guess where you were going. But you always kind of went down, right? Like,
yeah.
There'd be, like, this poison area that you couldn't get through no matter what kind of equipment you had. And, like, it wasn't until you defeated enough Metroids that
yep.
You'd be able to progress further. And then I think there's also a bit of a homing mechanism, so you knew if you got close at least.
Yep, yep.
Right? Those things are retained in the new game. But instead of that, there's these giant Chozo artifacts that serve a couple of purposes. They show you how many Metroids you have to get in that area, and it'll also give you hints if you only do like one at a time and come back and like
yeah.
give it this Metroid DNA to prove you are like unlocking the next level or whatever.
Okay.
It will give you a homing signal, like show you on the map where at least one more Metroid is in the sequence. Which I didn't realize it did that until I got to level 3 and I got like maybe like 8.
Yeah.
And then it showed me where the 9th one was and it was a little off base, but it didn't show me where the 10th one was. So I was like, what the hell? So that's why I ended up going to the internet. But yeah, then like this stuff recedes and you keep on going. But it kind of begs the question from a story perspective. Why are all these ancient artifacts controlling this to allow you to kill these Metroids? It doesn't make a lot of sense.
I don't know, but I mean, you'd have to question a lot of different games for that, because so many things like that. I mean, I guess you could say the same for, I don't know. I there's definitely other games where where, you know, the world leads to its own undoing. You know, but
right.
Okay, so you've played a lot of, you know, 2D Metroid games, and I know you like them a lot. Where does this fall on your list of 2D Metroid games?
Oh, boy. I recently replayed both Zero Mission and Fusion.
I know. We've talked a lot about your Fusion replay.
Yeah.
By the way, you totally sold me on that game. I picked up a copy recently.
Beautiful, excellent. Yep. It is a very good game. It's better than it has the right to be for how goofy a central premise is.
Yeah.
Honestly. But I like it a lot. I mean, honestly, I think this is one of the best 2D Metroid games ever made. From the perspective of like the atmosphere and the mechanics, I still think that Super Metroid is a perfect game, and you're not gonna convince me otherwise. Zero Mission was nice, but I think I'd rank Fusion above it.
Okay.
Huh.
I'll let you finish the game first. Okay. I'll ask you this question again because I think you need to take the whole package into account, because if it gets really boring in the second half or really crazy Groot. I am Groot. Okay, anyway, if it gets any sometimes the second half of a game can actually even be better than the first. So
Sure.
We'll come back to that.
Okay.
I guess.
But what the thing that's the weird about this for me is how, like, these Metroid games were in a sequence and they tell one story, like the first Metroid, Metroid 2, which was called, subtitled The Return of Samus, so Samus Returns is appropriate as a remake game. And then Metroid 3, which actually carried a story thread from Metroid 2. So the whole thing about the Metroid baby comes from Metroid 2. So if you've seen it in Metroid 3, if you've seen it in Another Realm, that is what they are referencing. The end of this game. So I haven't gotten that far yet. We'll see what twist they might try and put on that for this game. But
I hear rumor that by the end of the game, there's hints as to what Metroid Prime 4 is going to be.
So, oh, interesting. Okay. Because, I'm not clear where Metroid Prime falls in the sequence. Is it prior to Metroid 2? Is it after?
I mean, I always assume from the word prime that it would be, but I never really delved into the Metroid lore so much. My brother's really concerned about where Breath of the Wild falls in the Zelda canon and things like that, and I don't care at all.
So then Fusion comes after Super Metroid. So it's even called, like, all these games are called, like, Metroid 1, 2, 3, and 4 on their title screens, and that was the last one they made. Everything else has been an interquel of some kind. Metroid Prime series, all three of those games. Other M takes place right after Metroid 2, but before Super Metroid. It's weird. They refuse to move forward, and it's partly because Metroid Fusion kind of stuck them in a corner.
Yeah, I mean,
that they can't get out of.
Samus Aran wakes up. Oh, what a weird dream! All right, back to the events right after Super Metroid. No,
so the fifth 2D Metroid game is Zero Mission, which came out the same time as Metroid Prime 2.
Yeah,
because Fusion had to tie into Metroid Prime 1.
Didn't it link into it somehow with, like, the game link cable?
So like, they've moved backwards, right? Like, this game is like a remake of Metroid, the original Metroid, like, plus other stuff.
Yeah.
Right? Like, you finish Metroid, then you play this other game. That's part of it, which is really cool, and I like that.
Maybe the next Metroid game will be a remake of Fusion.
Oh, God. Well, you know what? Maybe they should, so they can finally make Metroid 5.
Yeah.
You know, that's what I want out of this. But there were some interesting new mechanical things in Zero Mission, right? Like, because everything's beholden to what Super Metroid did.
Yeah.
So like, one of the interesting things that they did in that game regarding the map was that they would give you an indication that there was an item nearby.
Oh.
And then after you beat the game, and I guess Fusion did this first, actually. After you beat the game, if there were any hidden things, it would show you, it would give you, like, counts, like, you know, I'm not going to show you where the secret item is on the map, but I'm going to say that there is, like, X out of however many MacGuffins you've collected in this area.
Okay.
Which is really helpful if you want 100% the game.
Yeah.
And it seems like Samus Returns takes a cue from that, but, like, you know, it's the same thing. It's like it's moving backwards and moving forwards at the same time. It's introduced a lot of interesting new mechanics, like the super shot you can do. Or they have the grappling hook in this game, but there's other mechanics you can do with it than just swinging across ceilings, right? But this is the game that had like the morph ball in it. So they've had to, like, do a lot of interesting things to keep you from sequence breaking.
It's like
if you have the spider ball, why do you need the grappling hook? Because you can just crawl around the walls everywhere in this game, and that's how the original Metroid 2 was. But no, they've changed it. So now there's, like, this slimy, slick areas of walls where you can't spider ball on them, you can't wall jump off of them, and they're very conscious to keep you from sequence breaking, which is nice on one hand. But on the other hand, it's like they defeated the mechanics of the game on purpose in a way that kind of bothers me.
Well, you love sequence breaking anyway, so they took out your fun.
They did, but I haven't found a good sequence break yet, but I've been trying. But I love the evolution of the mechanics, but it's so weird that it's stuck in a prequel or like a remake of an original game. I want them to make Metroid 5. I want them to put all this stuff in Metroid 5. And stop batting this back and forth here. Just find a way to move beyond Fusion and do it, because I don't know if people, I can't say people are not buying Metroid games because they're remakes.
But well, the thing I think one of the problems is the sales of Metroid Fusion were not great. You know, a lot of people didn't play it. I mean, even in the United States where it was popular, you know, and in Japan nobody plays any Metroid games at all. You know, I mean,
right.
Samus Returns did not sell well here. You know, it sold miserable. And that's a problem for the series going forward. And I kind of see why Nintendo's slightly reluctant to move, you know, to put full effort into a brand new game when there's no guaranteed sales. So, you know what? So I'm going to buy Metroid Prime Samus Return. Metroid Prime, sorry. I'm going to buy the 3DS one. Just to show my support.
Do it. It's honestly a really great game.
Plus, I'm really worried that game is going to become a valuable one in the future because it came out. It's coming out very late in the series' life. There's probably not going to be a greatest hits version, and I'm guessing in general, 3DS stuff is going to start disappearing from shelves fairly soon.
I should mention too that Metroid 2 was the first one to feature a save system US. In the US,
yes.
There were actually like save points all over the place, and I really love the 2.5D in this game. Like you step into the background to go into the save spots. You step into the background to like go up and down elevators, and they were cut. They're like really brief for the most part, but they're like Metroid Prime-esque cutscenes because everything's 3D rendered.
Yeah,
you know, and it works really really well. Like this massive.
Yeah.
Enemies in some cases that you can't really do as well through sprites. Sorry, Metroid, Super Metroid. I mean, they did a really good job for what it was at the time, but there were like things and creatures in the background that you can't interact with, but they like just make the world pop and come alive. I gotta finish this game, but I gotta solve my battery issues first. I might have to buy another 3DS before I finish it. That's why it's my future retro, though, is that it is literally both things. It's taking a retro game and putting it into the future, and it's a wonderful mash of the two.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Okay. All right. Tell you what. Let's make a deal. You need to buy Xenoblade 2, and I need to get this Metroid game.
You should get Metroid.
Well, I'll tell you, my birthday's coming up.
Okay. Oh, man. All right, finish looking at the mentions first, then we'll talk.
No.
At least play the Doctor Who level back.
I better soon, though. I bet those downloads are going to disappear at some point.
Yeah, you really should download everything that you can.
Like, yeah, I should just get it running to the point where I can get everything on my hard drive.
Mm-hmm.
Once I get those downloaded, I mean, there's no, like, it doesn't need to be online to play, right?
I don't think so. I don't know if it needs to be online. Now, it goes online every time, but
yeah.
I don't know if it needs to. I think it was unable to connect with the servers one time, and it still went through, but it just sat there for a while. I'm sure it's fine. I mean, that's why they'll let you download, right, is so that eventual obsolescence...
Yeah.
But
I hope so.
Do you have a question for Famicom Denshimail? Tweet us at Famicom Dojo with the hashtag Denshimail. Call us at 608-492-1923 and leave us a voicemail that we can play on the podcast or in a new video response. Leave a comment on this episode or one of our other videos. Or if you just want to share your own future retro or pile of shame, you can even send us a link to your YouTube video to be added to our official Denshimail playlist. Head over to famicomdojo.tv/podcast for more details.
Was there any like Famicom Dojo related news we wanted to impart? You mentioned you're working on a video. We're working on a bunch of videos. Let's just say that.
I just saw a script for a video that Sean's working on that's going to be pretty good.
Thank you.
Of course, we've got several parts of videos filmed. Some of the stuff still filmed when I was in the United States last time. And hopefully that'll be released before I'm in the United States again. By the way, August. Just be ready for that, Sean. We're going to film some stuff.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Well, I had one thing, one other thing I wanted to go over, because I think this is the last episode that we're going to be able to release, or close to the last episode we're going to release before the Wii shop shuts down.
Oh, yes, yes, yes.
I wanted your opinion on stuff. So I was going through before the podcast and making a list, and I had heard the 4CR guys talk about this a bit, but like there's this there are these Konami Rebirth games.
Yes,
that I haven't
yes.
seen
Castlevania,
or really heard much about.
And I think Gradius, maybe one more. I don't remember.
Well, the Castlevania one specifically, the Adventure. Is that in reference to the Game Boy game?
It is a remake of the Game Boy game. Yes.
Oh God, because I've been trying to play the Game Boy game, and I got to like the third area or whatever.
Yeah.
And I am done with it. I am done.
It's hard.
I don't know what I'm doing wrong, but like, you know, they're like, there's like a wall chasing me and I can't get through it fast enough no matter what I do. And I am just done.
This might be a good way to play it then.
All right. Well, it's $10 though. Like all, like nothing's on sale. The system is, the servers are shutting down. I did buy Contra Rebirth because I don't really have a good copy of Contra.
Yeah.
But you know, I forgot like, oh, there's a Sonic the Hedgehog game, Sonic the Hedgehog 4. I should avoid it. Okay.
I think you can get it for $1 on your iPhone.
Okay. All right, that's
or
fair
something
enough.
Like that. Like it's available on everything else. I think you should stick to the things that were Wii exclusive.
That's what I was going to ask you actually, cuz I think Mega Man 10 I can get other places, but I have Mega Man 9 on my Wii and I kind of just want to have it both in the same place. But, you know, If I can get it on, say, you know, the Wii U, then I might want to. But, you know, one thing we discussed was getting Strong Bad's Cool Game for Attractive People.
Like,
I didn't realize it was five episodes, and they're all $10 each.
Yes, they are. Yes, they are. Now, I mean, if you can't get that, like, okay, I only have episodes 1, 2, and 3 on the Wii because it was so expensive, and by the time I finished episode 3... The other two, I could get a pack of all the other episodes for $10.
That's
so,
where I'm going with this. Like, I want to get one episode
yeah.
just for the fact that I can have it on my Wii, but I'm probably going to play the whole thing elsewhere, like on Steam or something.
There's really no difference. I mean, there's not even references in the game. Only in the advertisements they made references to like the Wiimote and stuff like that. But in the game itself, they clearly knew it was going to be ported to other things. So there's no motion control. There's just although I find that using the Wii remote control as a pointer is a fun way to play.
Okay.
It is, but beyond that, you're going to get pretty much the same experience playing it on a computer.
The other thing I got out of that from downloading it was it mentioned that there were online features that, of course, no longer work because the Wii's online systems have shut down. And it did warn me, at least, that those features wouldn't be available. But it's still a fun game to play, which is all the more reason not to get it for my Wii, unfortunately.
Pretty much. I think there was a way to – something with, like, the Teen Girl Squad comics or something to share. I don't remember. But
so maybe
but like,
it doesn't really matter that much.
But, like, I didn't even do it. So I don't really know. I just played through just to play the story and stuff like that. But so you can skip that.
Okay.
I think you should get My Life as a King and My Life as a Dark Lord.
Are those Wii exclusive?
They're Wii exclusive, yes.
Okay, yeah, because they're Final Fantasy Crystal Chronicles branded, and Crystal Chronicles is already like in. Like a sort of side brand of Final Fantasy, and now they're so that's $25. I think My Life as a King is $15, and then Dark Lord is $10.
$10, yeah. I didn't buy My Life as a King, although I hear it's really great. I only bought My Life as a Dark Lord, and it's a tower defense game, and it's super fun. But if you're already burnt out on tower, it was the first tower defense game I played.
Oh, is it? Okay.
So I was not burnt out on them yet. Now I'm burnt out on you know what I mean?
Okay.
So if that's the time. And My Life as a King is a simulation game, and there's a very similar game for it on the Switch called Orderland. But I mean, not super similar, but I mean the same type of game where you, it's an RPG where you don't fight the battles, you just order people to fight battles, you know. It's a it's a management sim.
I'm mostly looking at the virtual console stuff that like that isn't on Wii U.
Okay.
But don't want to get the cartridge version as of.
Okay. Get East 1 and 2 because it's kind of expensive.
Yep, 800 points for that one.
Yeah, but I mean like getting I mean, I guess it's not one, it's one of the most common titles for PC Engine, but you know, you'll if you want a game that's really expensive, Dynastic Hero, which is on the eShop, Dynastic Hero goes for 800 yen on the shop, but like I think that game is like $300.
Oh my gosh.
If you want to buy the actual disc. Same with, of course, Castlevania Rondo of Blood.
Yes, and that's 900 points on there. So I was thinking of picking
that up. You should get that one.
Splatterhouse is 600. Fighting Street is 800.
Don't bother with Fighting Street.
Oh,
Fighting
come Street on. I have the CD version on the...
I know, so you should know better.
Oh, God. Everything else just about that I was looking at is actually available on the Wii U. So like the N64 and NES games I was looking at are available.
Did Sin and Punishment make
yes,
the leap?
It
okay,
did.
Then yeah,
it's $12.
That's
the same price on both.
That's one I bought and really really enjoyed. So
Majora's Mask is there, and I want a version that doesn't require the battery backup. You know, I haven't played my N64 version since I bought it in 2000. Hmm.
Yeah,
that was 90. Oh. Yeah, 2000.
Did Ogre Battle get
64? Yes, I want to say.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay, then that's about it. Take a look at, of course, the... Did Genesis games come to the...
I don't think so. So, like, Comic Zone's out there, and I want to pick that up. There's three Echo games. I didn't realize there's three of them. For NES, I was looking at Star Tropics 1 and 2, which are also on the Wii U.
Okay.
So I want to get virtual console versions of those because I, you know, I have the NES ones, but I'm worried about the batteries dying.
I feel that there's going to be infinite ways of getting Nintendo first party games. You know what I mean? Be it a mini console or a future virtual console or a subscription service.
Right.
I'm not too worried about that, but like old Hudson games and stuff. The licensing might be weird going forward.
That's something we didn't really mention during the episode was that, you know, since day one, Nintendo said, hey, we're going to have this digital service coming in the fall, and crickets, nothing. No virtual console for the entire year.
Yeah.
We've had arcade releases.
Yeah, again, I'm seeing that as a positive for me right now because there's a strong temptation for me instead, you know, when I'm like, oh, look at all these new games I have, to go, I'm just going to play Zelda again. You know what I mean? Like the first Zelda, you know, because it's kind of gaming comfort food, which is great. But by not having that, it's actually pushed me to play some newer games. So I don't know.
I guess I'm just happy I'm not having to do all this hand-wringing about it like I am right now with the Wii U and the Wii. They're not being a virtual console to speak of, you know, minus the smattering of arcade and Neo Geo games.
Yep.
Isn't harming my opinion of the Switch. And
no, it's not. That's what's strange.
Yeah, there's so much other stuff I can actually play rather than the games.
I wasn't too concerned about it with the Wii either because there was a stream of regular stuff, you know. But with the Wii U, its absence was deafening. You know what I mean? It's like,
sure.
Because there wasn't much else on it. So I remember the one probably whole year, the best title I played on the Wii U was Earthbound. You know what I mean?
Mm.
I mean, that's a great game.
I've had to finish that, and I have two copies of it now.
Two copies?
Yeah, it's on the SNES Classic.
Oh, yeah. I need to get one of those still. Actually,
yeah, you do.
Yeah. Again, if you see one of them in a store, pick it up for me. I'll pay you back, you know, because because the price Amazon's charging for them is pretty high, plus the shipping. And I'll just pick it up when I'm in America in August. I'm in no rush. I just don't want to miss it.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and by the way, the Famicom Classic is going back on sale soon. They're putting it back into production, so if you're still interested, we can arrange a little swap.
Yeah, because NES Classic's supposed to be too, right? So let's, absolutely.
Yep.
Okay, yep, well, let's do that, and maybe when you're, maybe in August we can,
Well, yeah. I mean, that's a long podcast we just had, but I mean, but I feel like I have barely scratched the surface of the first year of the Wii, right. First year of the Switch. I gotta say that, like, I'm more excited for this console than I have been for a Nintendo system since Super Nintendo.
Mm-hmm. You can say that about the Wii U, but you're more excited about this than the Wii U, I guess. So,
yeah, I liked the Wii U. I really did like the Wii U, and I was playing a lot because of the gamepad. But as I said, like, this system is better than the Wii U in every possible way.
Yeah.
Except I do miss Miiverse, but I don't miss it enough that I actually even want it on the Switch. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I miss it a little bit. I agree with you. It's good to be back podcasting. It really is.
It's nice to be back on a somewhat regular schedule. I mean, weekly's not going to really do it for us anymore, but I think, you know, every 2 weeks, barring unforeseen accidents, hospitalizations, and sickness, we probably can do so.
We're working on stuff. Make sure you guys check out our Facebook page. We're actually trying to put some videos on there too. Mostly snippets of stuff you've seen on YouTube, but we're trying to garner some more interest and test out Facebook as a video platform, especially with all the YouTube shenanigans happening lately.
But please do watch our YouTube videos, because if we don't get enough hits, it's getting a little dangerous out there. Yeah.
Yeah. So good thing I mentioned all those ones that we did. So the Switch launch special. The Zelda unboxing and any of those launch specials, really, if you want to go back and compare and contrast to the Wii and the Wii U's launches as well. And there was a third one, wasn't there? I totally forgot.
Something about the controller.
Oh, yeah. The Sean Norris channel also has one about the Wii U Pro controller that was supposed to come out in 2013 as part of a new series I was doing for Powett's TV, and then Powett TV wasn't happening anymore. So you can go and watch that. It's a pretty good video. It was a direct reference to all the complaints about how it was just basically an Xbox 360 controller, and I demolished the argument point by point. So all right.
Well,
so
well
then,
done.
thank you. And no one watched it, so everyone watched that one now. Also, make sure that you subscribe or you go and like the new That's Orange Facebook page. So I'm trying to put shorter form new things on there too. If you guys want an outlet, it's all experimental. We're trying to see what's a good way to handle social media for our video stuff going forward.
Yep.
Like will people watch our stuff on Twitter? We could put it on Twitter too.
Can you put stuff on Twitter?
Yeah.
Only clips, right?
I don't know how long, but I can see if we can do more than just little clips.
Our Vine experiment went away.
Yeah, the
Vine
stuff
went away. Yeah.
But, you know, those Vine videos have been immortalized in other videos.
Yeah, that's true.
So, all right, cool beans.
Snapchat.
Oh, God. Well, I guess on that note, until next time, the dojo is
available physically in only a very, very limited edition.
The Fam
Famicom Dojo Video Game Podcast is produced every week by That's Orange LLC. Theme songs One More Continue and RPG were written and performed by the Amaritones. Find them on iTunes or amaritones.net. Pixel art by Lewis Sled Judson at lewisstrations.co.uk. Find us on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher Radio, YouTube, or wherever RSS feeds are downloaded.
Famicom Dojo.
That's when you invite us to your house. that's the physical edition of Famicom Dojo.
Oh, God.
It's just us. It's just us. It's swipe right for us on Tinder. No.
What?
Is it right the way you swipe to go?
I don't know.
Well.
Here's how it works. One of my friends comes by the studio. I pick their favorite movie, and we talk about it for 10 minutes.
Luke, why the f*** do you like this movie?
Well, I'll tell you why the f*** I like this movie, Rob.
Go get it. It's on Netflix. Go watch it. It's brilliant. Do it now, or I'll punch you.
Up top!
This is 10 Minutes About Your Favorite Movie.
Listen to 10 Minutes About Your Favorite Movie every Monday on the Little Podcast Network.